Hello everyone. I'm going to read this book by Matt Haig called A Boy Called Christmas, because obviously that special time's coming up. This is a bit of a long book. It's several chapters, so it might take us a while, because it's got, let me see, how many pages has it got? I'm going to take it to the back. Well, there's a letter at the back and everything. It's got 265 pages, so it might take us a little bit of time. So here we go. An ordinary boy. You are about to read the true story of Father Christmas. How cool. Yes, Father Christmas. You may wonder how I know the true story of Father Christmas, and I will tell you that you shouldn't really question such things. Not right at the start of a book. It's rude, for one thing. All you need to understand is that I do know the story of Father Christmas, or else why would I be writing it? Maybe you don't call him Father Christmas. Maybe you call him something else, like Santa or Saint Nick or Santa Claus or Sinterklaas or Kris Kringle or Pelsnickel or Papa Noel or a strange man with a big belly who talks to reindeers and gives me presents. Or maybe you have a name you've come up with yourself just for fun. If you were an elf, though, you would always call him Father Christmas. It was the pixies who started calling him Santa Claus and spread the word just to confuse things in their mischievous way. But whatever you happen to call him, you know him, and that's the main thing. Can you believe there was a time when nobody knew about him? A time when he was just an ordinary boy called Nicholas, living in the middle of nowhere or in the middle of Finland, doing nothing with magic except believing in it. A boy who knew very little about the world except the taste of mushroom soup, the feel of cold north wind and the stories he was told, and who only had a doll made out of a turnip to play with. But life was going to change for Nicholas in ways he could never have imagined. Things were going to happen to him. Good things. Bad things. Impossible things. But if you were one of those people who believe that some things are impossible, you should put this book down right away. It is most certainly not for you, because this book is full of impossible things. Are you still reading the book? Yes, we are. Good. Elves would be proud. Then let us begin. This is chapter 1. The Woodcutter's Son. Now, Nicholas was a happy boy. Well, actually, no. He would have told you he was happy if you asked him, and he certainly tried to be happy, but sometimes being happy is quite tricky. I suppose what I'm saying is that Nicholas was a boy who believed in happiness the way he believed in elves and trolls and pixies. But he never had actually seen an elf or a troll or a pixie, and he hadn't really seen proper happiness either. At least not for a very long time. He didn't have it that easy. Take Christmas. This is the list of every present Nicholas had received for Christmas in his entire life. Number 1. A wooden sleigh. Number 2. A doll carved out of a turnip. Oh dear. That's it. The truth is, Nicholas's life was hard. But he made the best of it. He had no brothers or sisters to play with, and the nearest town, Christinan Kaupunki, wow, was a long way away, thank goodness, to be fair. It took even longer to get to than it did to pronounce it. And anyway, there wasn't much to do except go to church or look in the window of the toy shop. Papa, look! A wooden reindeer, Nicholas would gasp as he pressed his nose against the glass of that toy shop. Or, look, an elf doll. Or, look, a cuddly doll of the king. And once he even asked, can I have one? He looked up at his father's face, a long, thin face, with thick, bushy eyebrows and skin rougher than old shoes in the rain. Do you know how much it is? Said Joel, his father. No, said Nicholas. And then his father held up his hands, fingers stretched. He only had 4.5 fingers on his left hand because of an accident with an axe. A horrible accident. Oh, wow. That toy shop is cool. Hold on. It says a horrible accident. Oh, you might not want to know this. There was lots of blood.
Ooh.
And we probably shouldn't dwell on it too much, as this is a Christmas story. 4.5 rubles, he said. His father looked cross. No, 5. 5 rubles, and 5 rubles for an elf doll is too much money. You could buy a cottage for that. I thought cottages cost 100 rubles, Papa. Don't try and be clever, Nicholas. I thought you said I should try and be clever. Not right now, said his father. And anyway, why would you need an elf doll when you have a turnip doll your mother made? Couldn't you pretend the turnip is an elf? Yes, Papa, of course, Nicholas said, because he didn't want to make his father upset. Don't worry, son. I'll work hard that one day I'll be rich and you can have all the toys you want and we can have a real horse with our own coach and ride into town like a king and a prince. Don't work too hard, Papa, said Nicholas. You need to play sometimes too. And I am happy with my turnip doll. But his father had to work hard, chopping wood all day and every day. He worked as soon as it was light until when it was dark. The trouble is, we live in Finland, his father explained, on the day other stories starts. Oh, on the day our story starts. Doesn't everyone live in Finland? Asked Nicholas. It was morning and they were heading out into the forest, passing the old stone well that they could never look at. The ground was dusted with a thin layer of snow. Joel had an axe on his back and the blade dazzled in the cold morning sun. No, said Joel, some people live in Sweden. And there are about 7 people who live in Norway, maybe even 8. The world is a big place. So what's the problem with living in Finland, Papa? Trees. Trees? I thought you liked trees. That's why you chop them down. But there are trees everywhere, so no one pays much. Joel stopped and turned around. What is it, Papa? Thought I heard something. They saw nothing but birch and pine trees and shrubs and herbs and heather. A tiny red-breasted bird sat on a branch. Must have been nothing, Joel said, unsure. Joel stared up at a giant pine and pressed his hand on the rough bark. This is the one. He began chopping and Nicholas began his search for mushrooms and berries. Nicholas only had a single mushroom in his basket when he came. When he caught a glimpse of an animal in the distance. Nicholas loved animals, but mainly only saw birds and mice and rabbits, and sometimes he would see a moose. But this, oh my, was something bigger and stronger. A bear, a giant brown bear, about 3 times the size of Nicholas, standing on its hind legs. Its huge paws scooping berries into its mouth. Nicholas's heart started a drum roll with excitement. I don't think I'd be excited about a bear. I mean, I love bears, but no. He decided to get a closer look. He walked quietly forward. He was quite close now. I know that bear. The terrifying moment when he realised he recognised the bear was also the one where he stepped on a twig and it cracked. The bear turned and stared straight at him. Nicholas felt something grab his arm hard. He turned to see his father looking crossly down at him. What are you doing? He hissed. You get yourself killed. His dad's grip was so tight it hurt, but then he let go. Be the forest, whispered Joel. This was something he always said whenever danger was around, and Nicholas never knew what it meant. He just stayed still. But it was too late. Nicholas remembered when he was 6 years old, his mother, his jolly, singing, rosy-cheeked mother. They had been going to get some water from the well when they'd seen the exact same bear. Oh dear. His mother had told Nicholas to run back to the cottage, and Nicholas had run. She hadn't. Nicholas watched his father hold his axe with a strong grip, but he saw his father's hands tremble. He pulled Nicholas back behind him in case the bear charged. Run, his father said. No, I'm staying with you. It was unclear if the bear was going to chase them. It probably wasn't. It probably was too old and tired. But it did roar at them. And then, right at that moment, there was a whistling sound. Oh my. Nicholas felt something brush against his ear like a fast feather. A moment later, a grey feathered arrow pierced the tree beside the bear's head. The bear went down on all fours and sloped away. Nicholas and Joel looked behind them, trying to see who had fired the arrow. But there was nothing but pine trees. It must be the hunter, said Joel. A week before, they had found an injured moose with the same grey feathered arrow sticking out of it. Nicholas had made his father help the poor creature. He'd watched him gather snow and press it into the wound before pulling the arrow out. They kept staring through the trees. A twig cracked, but they didn't see anything. All right, Christmas, let's go, Joel said. Nicholas hadn't been called that for a long time. Back in the old days, his father used to joke about him and have fun. He used to call everybody nicknames. Nicholas' mother was called Sweetbread, even though her real name was Lilja, I think that's how you say it. And Nicholas himself was nicknamed Christmas, because he'd been born on Christmas Day. His father had even engraved his wooden sleigh with the nickname. Look at him, Sweetbread, our little boy Christmas. He was hardly ever called that now. But don't ever go spying on bears, okay? You'll get yourself killed. Stay near me. You're still clearly a boy. A little later, after Joel had been chopping for an hour, he sat down on the tree stump. I could help you, offered Nicholas. His father held up his hand. This is what happens when 11-year-olds use axes. Finger the blood. So Nicholas just kept his eyes to the ground, looking for mushrooms, and wondered if being 11 years old was ever going to be any fun. Right then, the cottage and the mouse. Chapter 2. The cottage where Nicholas and Joel lived was the second smallest cottage in the whole of Finland. It only had one room, so the bedroom was also the kitchen and the living room and the bathroom. Actually, there was no bath. There wasn't even a toilet. The toilet was just a massive deep hole in the ground outside. The house had two beds with mattresses stuffed with straw and feathers. The sledge was always kept outside, but Nicholas kept his turnip doll beside the bed to remind him of his mother. But Nicholas didn't mind. It didn't really matter how small a house was if you had a big imagination. And Nicholas spent his time daydreaming and thinking of magical things like pixies and elves. The best part of Nicholas's day was bedtime, because this is when his father would tell him a story. A little brown mouse, who Nicholas named Mika, would sneak into the warmth of the cottage and listen too. Well, Nicholas liked to think that Mika was listening, but really he was just fantasizing about cheese, which took quite a lot of fantasizing, as Mika was a forest mouse and there weren't even any cows or goats in the forest, and he had never seen or smelt cheese, let alone tasted it. But Mika, like all mice, believed in the existence of cheese and knew it would taste very, very good if he got such an opportunity. Anyway, Nicholas would lie there in the happy coziness of his bed and listen intently to his father's stories. Joel always looked tired He had rings under his eyes and he seemed to get a new one every year, like a tree. Now, said his father that night, what story would you like tonight? I'd like you to tell me about the elves. Again? You've been told about the elves every night since you were three. Please, Papa, I'd like to hear about them. So Joel told a story about the elves of the far north, who lived beyond the only mountain in Finland, a secret mountain that some people doubt is there. The elves lived in a magical land, a snow-covered village called Elfhelm, surrounded by wooded hills. Are they real, Papa? Nicholas asked. Yes, I've seen them, his father said. But I believe they are, and sometimes believing is as good as knowing. And Nicholas agreed, but Mika the Mouse disagreed. Or he would have done if he understood. If he had understood, he would have said, I'd rather taste real cheese than just believe in it. But for Nicholas, it was enough. Yes, Papa, I know believing is as good as knowing, and I believe the elves are friendly. Do you? Yes, said Joel, and they wear brightly coloured clothes. You wear colourful clothes, Papa. That was true, but Joel's clothes were made from leftover rags he got for free from the tailors in town. He made himself multicoloured patchwork trousers and a green shirt, and best of all, a big floppy-eared red hat with a white furry trim and a furry white cotton bobble. That kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? Oh yes, I do, but my clothes are getting old and tatty and the elves' clothes are always looking brand new and... He stopped right there. There was a noise outside. A moment later came three hard knocks on the door. Ooh. Chapter 3, The Hunter. That's strange, said Joel. Maybe it's Aunt Carlota, said Nicholas, really hoping more than anything in the world that it wasn't Aunt. I think it's Carlota. Could be Carlota. Joel walked over to the door. It wasn't a long walk. It only took him a step. He opened the door to reveal a man. A tall, strong, broad-shouldered, square-jawed man with hair like golden straw. He had bright blue eyes and smelt of hay and looked as powerful as 20 horses, or half a bear. He looked strong enough to lift the cottage off the ground, if that had been what he wanted to do. But he wasn't in the mood for lifting cottages off the ground today. They recognised the arrows the man was carrying on his back, and the grey feathers. It's you, said Joel, the hunter. Nicholas could see his father was impressed. It is, said the man. Even his voice sounded like it had muscles. My name is Anders. That was a pretty close thing with the bear earlier. Yes, thank you. Come in, come in. I'm Joel, and this is my good son, Nicholas. The big man noticed the mouse sitting in the corner of the room eating a mushroom. I don't like you, said Mika, looking at the man's large shoes. Your feet are frankly terrifying. Would you like a drink? Joel asked meekly. I have some cloudberry wine. Yes, said Anders, and then he saw Nicholas and smiled in a friendly way at him. Wine would be nice. I see that you wear your red hat even indoors, Joel. Well, it keeps me warm. Cloudberry wine, thought Nicholas, as Joel pulled down a bottle that was hiding on the top of the kitchen cupboard. He didn't know his father had any cloudberry wine. Fathers were mysteries. I've come to ask if you can help with something, said Anders. Ask away, Joel said, pouring out two cups of wine. Anders took a sip, then a gulp, then drank the entire cup. He wiped his mouth with his big right hand. I want you to do something. Something for the king. Joel was startled. King Frederick? Then he laughed. This was clearly dark hunter humour. For a minute there, I actually believed you. What on earth would the king require from a humble woodcutter like myself? Joel waited for Anders to laugh too, but there was a long silence. I've been watching you all day. You're good with an axe, Anders trailed off, seeing that Nicholas was sitting up in his bed, wide open eyes, listening to the most exciting conversation he'd ever heard. Maybe we should talk in private. Joel nodded so hard that the white bobble on his hat fell forward. Nicholas, could you go in the other room? But Papa, we don't have another room. His father sighed. Oh, yes, you're right. Well, he said to his giant guest, maybe we should go outside. It's quite a mild summer. You can borrow my hats if you want. Anders laughed loud and long. I'll think I'll survive without it. And so the men went outside and Nicholas went to bed, straining to hear what they said. He listened to the voices murmuring and he could just pick out the odd word. Men, king, rubles, Turku, long, mountain, weapons, distance, money. Money was mentioned a few times. But then he heard a word that made him sit up in bed. A magical word, maybe the most magical word of all. Elves. Nicholas saw Mika scuttling along the edge of the floor. He stood up on his back legs and stared at Nicholas and looked ready to have a conversation. Well, he looked as ready as a mouse ever looks to have a conversation, which wasn't much. Cheese, said the mouse, in mouse language. I've got a very bad feeling about all this, Mika. Mika looked up at the window and Nicholas thought his tiny dark eyes seemed filled with worry and that his nose was twitching nervously. And if I can't have cheese, I'll eat this stinky old vegetable creature instead. Mika turned to the turnip doll lying by Nicholas's bed and took a bite. Hey, that was a Christmas present, said Nicholas. I'm a mouse. Christmas means nothing to me. Hey, said Nicholas again, but it was hard to be cross with the mouse. So he let Mika carry on nibbling the turnip doll's ear off. The men stayed outside the window for a long time talking, distant words and drinking cloudberry wine. As Nicholas lay there worried in the dark, with a bad feeling in his stomach, Mika also had a bad feeling in his stomach, but that was what you get from eating raw turnip. Good night, Mika. I wish it had been cheese, said Mika. And Nicholas lay there with a horrible thought. The thought was this. Something bad is going to happen. And he was right. It was. The next chapter is called The Sleigh and Other Bad News. Listen, son, I have something I must tell you, said his father as they ate stale rye bread for breakfast. This was Nicholas's second favourite breakfast, right after unstale rye bread. What is it, Papa? What did Anders want to ask you? Joel took a deep breath, as if the next sentence was something he had to swim through. I've been offered a job, he said. It's a lot of money. It could be the answer to everything, but... Nicholas waited, holding his breath, and then it came. But I'll have to go away. What? Don't worry, it won't be long. Only 2 months. Two months? Joel had a bit of a think. 3 at the most. That sounded like forever. What kind of job takes 3 months? It's an expedition. A group of men are heading to the far north. They want to find Elfhelm. Nicholas could hardly believe what he was hearing. His mind was spinning with excitement. He always believed in elves, but never really imagined that people could actually go and see them. Elves. Living, breathing elves. The elf village. His father nodded. The king has said there's a reward for anyone who finds proof of the elf village. 12,000 rubles. Between 7 men, there's over 3,000 each. I don't think it is, said Nicholas. We'd never even have to worry about money again. Wow. Can I come? I can spot a mushroom from a mile away, even in the snow. I'll be really useful. His father's long, leathery face looked sad. The skin under his eyes had gained another ring, and his eyebrows were sliding apart, like caterpillars falling out of love. Even his dirty old red hat seemed floppier and sadder than usual. It's too dangerous, Joel, said his breath. He said, his breath smelling of sour cloudberries. And I'm not just talking about bears. There will be many nights sleeping out in the cold, and Finland is a large country. 100 miles north of here, there is a village called, I possibly not going to be able to say this, Seppiävi. Beyond that, nothing but iced plains and lakes and snow. Even the forests are frozen, and by the time you reach Lapland, food, even mushrooms, will be hard to find. And then the journey gets even more difficult, which is why no one has ever made it to the far north. Tears filled Nicholas's eyes, but he was determined not to cry. He stared at his father's hand and the missing half finger. So how do you know you'll make it? There are 6 other men, good strong men, I'm told. We have as good a chance as anyone. He gave his familiar crinkled-eyed smile. It will be worth it, I promise you. We'll make a lot of money on this expedition, which means we'll never have to worry. We'll never have to have watery mushroom soup or stale bread again. Nicholas's father was sad and didn't want to make him feel any worse. He knew he must be brave. I'll miss you, Papa, but I understand you must go. You're a child of the forest, Joel said, his voice trembling. You've a tough spirit, but remember, you mustn't go near danger. You must stop your curiosity. You have too much courage. I'll be back by September when the weather gets worse, and we'll eat like the king himself. He held up a piece of dry rye bread in disgust. Sausages and fresh buttered bread and mountains of bilberry pie. And cheese, wondered Mika. But no one heard. Bilberry pie? Nicholas nearly fainted at the thought. He was so hungry that the idea of a sweet purple berries encrusted in mouth-watering pastry seemed like heaven itself. He'd once tasted a bilberry, and it had been lovely, but everyone knew that the way to make something even lovelier was to put it in a pie. But then he became sad again and the thought occurred to him. Surely Joel, who was scared to let Nicholas out of his sight sometimes, wouldn't be leaving him on his own. Who'll look after me? Don't worry, said Joel. I'll write to my sister and she'll keep you safe. Sister? Oh no. This was even worse. It was bad enough spending the whole Christmas afternoon with Aunt Carlotta, let alone spending 3 whole months with her. It's all right. I can be on my own. I'm a child of the forest. I can... Now his father interrupted him. No. It's a dangerous world and you're still a child. We saw that yesterday. Aunt Carlotta is lonely, a lonely woman, and she's a lot older than me. She's really an old lady now. She's 42. Oh my. Hardly anyone lives to 42. It'll be nice for her to have somebody to look after. He looked at his son for a long while before breaking the final piece of bad news. Oh, and I need to take your sleigh. Anders thought it would be useful to hold our supplies. And anyway, it is summer. The snow is too thin on the ground around here. Nicholas nodded. He could not think of an answer. You still have your turnip, Doll? Joel pointed to the sad-looking turnip with a face carved in it that was sitting by Nicholas's bed. Yes, said Nicholas. He supposed that as turnip dolls go, it was a very nice one. Maybe it was the best doll made out of a rotten, stinking turnip in the whole of Finland. That's true. I still have that. And so, 10 days later, on a cold but sunny morning, Nicholas watched his father leave. Joel was wearing his red hat, carrying his axe on his back, and dragging the wooden sleigh behind him. He headed off under a pink sky, through the tall pine trees to meet the other men. And then, after that, really bad things started to happen. The arrival of Aunt Colotta. Even at a time when most aunts were nasty and horrible, Aunt Colotta was particularly bad. She was a tall, grey-clothed, thin woman with white hair and a long, stern face. Oh dear. And a very thin mouth, like a full stop. Everything about her, even her voice, seemed covered in frost. "Now," she said sternly, "it is most important we set some rules. The first rule is that you must wake up with the sunrise." Nicholas gasped. This was horrible. Finland was in summer, but the sunrise is in the middle of the night. "The second rule is that you do not answer me back, ever, especially about the first rule." Aunt Colotta looked at Mika, who had just climbed up the table leg and was now scuttling across the table looking for crumbs. She seemed disgusted. "And the third rule," she said, "is no rats." "He's not a rat." But it was too late. She had picked Mika the mouse up by his tail and carried the struggling creature to the door, which she opened before throwing him outside. "Hey, you can't do that," shouted Mika at the top of his voice. But at the top of Mika's voice was nowhere near the bottom of most people's voices, so no one heard him. She closed the door, sniffing the air, and her eyes landed on the turnip doll by Nicholas's bed. She picked it up, and no horrible rotten vegetables either. "It's a doll. Look, it's got a face on it." "Actually, on second thoughts, I'll keep it. Might distract me from this smell of you." Nice. Aunt Colotta considered Nicholas with even more contempt than she had shown the rotten turnip. "I'd forgotten how much I hate children, especially boys. I find them revolting. It's becoming as clear as air. Oh, my ignorant nine-fingered brother had been too soft with you." She looked around the small one-roomed cottage. "Do you know why I came?" she asked. "Did he tell you?" "To look after me." Her laugh flapped out of her suddenly and scarily, like bats from a cave. It was the first and last time he would ever hear her laugh. "To look after you? Oh, that's good. That's funny, that is. What world you must live in to think people just do good things for no reason. Do you really think I came here because I cared about you? No. I did not come here for a skinny, grubby, childish fool. I came here for the money." "The money?" "Yes. Your father has promised me 500 rubles on his return. That could buy my 5 cottages." "What would you need 5 cottages for?" "To make more money, and then more money." "Is money all that matters?" "Spoken like a true, grubby little pauper. Now, where do you sleep?" "There," said Nicholas, pointing first at his bed, and then to the other end of the room. "And that's where Papa sleeps." Aunt Colotta shook her head. "No. I don't understand, Sir Nicholas. Can't have you in here seeing me in my undergarments. And besides, I have a very bad back. I'll need both mattresses. You don't want it to get worse, do you?" "No, of course not," said Nicholas. "Good. So yes, you will sleep outside."
"Outside?"
"Yes, outside. Fresh air is good for the soul. I never understood why children want to be indoors all the time these days. I know it's nearly the 19th century, but still, go on, shoo. It's getting dark. So that night, Nicholas lay on the grass outside his house. He had taken his mother's old winter coat to sleep under and lay on the smoothest patch of grass he could find between two great tree stumps his father had chopped years ago. But there was always pebbles somewhere under his back. The wind blew and he watched Aunt Colotta in the distance squat over the hole in the ground, hoisting up her petticoat to go to the toilet. He hoped she'd fall in. Then he hated himself for thinking that. She went back into the cottage and he shivered under a sky full of twinkling stars. He clutched his rotten turnip for comfort and he started to think about the unfairness of the universe and he wished there was some way of making it fair again. As he thought, Mika crept over and joined him, crawling over his arm and nestling on his chest. "I feel sorry for Aunt Colotta," he said. "It can't feel nice to be that miserable, can it?" "I don't know," said Mika. Nicholas gazed up at the night. Even though he had nothing much to be happy about, he liked to have such sights to look at. A shooting star fell through the sky. "Did you see that, Mika? It means we have to make a wish." So Nicholas wished for a way of replacing meanness with goodness. "Do you believe in magic, Mika?" "I believe in cheese, if that counts," said Mika. There's no way of Nicholas knowing for sure if the mouse did or didn't believe in magic, but comforted by hope, Nicholas and his little rodent friend managed to fall slowly and gently asleep as a cold breeze kept blowing and whispering all the unknown secrets of the night. The next chapter is called Rumbling Stomachs and Other Nightmares. Nicholas slept outside all summer. He spent every day, as Aunt Colotta told him to do, looking for food, from first light until nightfall. One day he saw the bear again. The bear stood upright, but Nicholas waited and stayed calm. Be the forest. The bear stood there, peaceful and terrifying all at once. And the bear had chased his mother towards the well. But he couldn't hate this creature. "Look at me," said Nicholas. "I'm as skinny as a rake. No meat on my bones." The bear seemed to agree and ambled away on all fours. Was there an unluckier boy in the world? Yes, actually there was. There was a boy called Gatu who lived in India, who'd been struck by lightning while going to the toilet in a stream. Very nasty. But even so, it was a miserable, joyless time for Nicholas, and Aunt Colotta was never happy with the mushrooms and the herbs he managed to find, and the only real comfort, apart from Mika, was in counting down the days and weeks and months until his father returned, which he did by scratching lines in the nearest pine tree to the cottage. 2 months passed, then three. "Where are you?" he asked amid the trees. The only sound that came back to him was that of the wind or a distant woodpecker. Aunt Colotta became nastier with the days, like vinegar getting more sour. She'd scream at him for nothing. "Stop that!" shouted Aunt Colotta one evening as she ate the soup he'd made for her. "Or I'll feed you to a bear!"
"Stop what?"
"Those horrible noises from inside you, your disgusting body." Nicholas was confused. The only way to stop a rumbling stomach was by eating. And with most days, he'd only found enough mushrooms for Aunt Colotta to have soup, and then the ones he'd sneaked into his mouth in the forest hadn't been enough. But then Aunt Colotta smiled. A smile on her face was an unusual thing to see, like a banana in the snow. "All right, you can have some soup." "Oh, thank you, Aunt Colotta. I'm so hungry and I love mushroom soup." Aunt Colotta shook her head. "As you always make me soup, I thought I would repay the favour. So while you were out in the forest, I made some soup." "Oh no." "Especially for you." Mika was looking through the window. "Don't eat it," he squeaked pointlessly. Nicholas looked worried as he stared down at the murky green-brown liquid. "What is it made with?" he asked. "Love," said Aunt Colotta. Nicholas knew she had to be joking, and Aunt Colotta loved any more than couldn't love anyone any more than an icicle could love. That's a bit unfair to icicles. Icicles melt. Aunt Colotta was frozen as a frozen thing that was very frozen and would never melt. "Go on then, eat it." It was the most disgusting thing he had ever tasted. It was like eating mud and dirt and puddle water. But he could feel Aunt Colotta watching him, so he kept eating. Aunt Colotta's cold grey eyes made Nicholas feel 100 times smaller than he was. And as she said for what seemed like the 100th time, "Your father is foolish." Nicholas didn't answer her back. He just kept sipping the foul soup, feeling more and more sick. But Aunt Colotta wasn't going to leave it there. "Everybody knows there are no such things as elves," she said, spitting as she spoke. "Your father is stupid, ignorant, and to believe such things. I'd be very surprised if he's still alive. No one has ever been to the far north and returned to tell the tale. I was so stupid coming here waiting for 500 rubles that will never arrive." "You can always go home." "Oh, no, I can't now. It's October. The weather has turned. I can't walk 10 miles in this weather. I'm here all winter now for Christmas. Not that Christmas means anything to me. It's a hateful time of year." This was just too much. "Christmas is great," Nicholas said. "I love Christmas, and I don't care that it clashes with my birthday." He was going to say, "The only thing that spoils Christmas is you," but he thought better of it. Aunt Colotta seemed genuinely confused. "How can you, a grubby, dirty, motherless boy, love Christmas? If you were a rich merchant's son in Turku or Helsinki, then I could understand it, but my brother has always been too poor to buy you a present." Nicholas felt a red flush of anger tingle in his skin. "It was always magical, and I would rather a toy that was made with love than one that cost a lot of money." "But the only thing he ever made you was the sleigh. He always was too busy working." Nicholas thought of his old turnip doll and wondered where it was. It wasn't beside the door where he'd left it. "Your father is a liar." "No," said Nicholas. He had finished the soup, but now felt extremely ill. "He promised you he'd come back. He told you the elves were real. 2 lies right there. Anyway, I'm tired now," said his aunt. "It's time for my bed. So now that you've finished your soup, you can kindly get out of my sight. And that would make me as happy as the Queen of Finland. This is my house now, and I'm your guardian. So I'd start doing exactly what I say." "Oh no. Get out. Go." Nicholas stood up, his stomach aching. He looked around the room. "Where's my turnip doll?" Aunt Colotta smiled. It was a proper smile, and one that was soon turning into a laugh. And then she said it. "You've just eaten him." "What?" "Oh no." It took a second. No, 2 seconds, maybe 3. 3 and a half, actually. No, just 3. But then Nicholas realised what she had said. His only toy in the world was now in his stomach, and he ran outside and threw up in the toilet hole. "Why did you do that?" he asked in disbelief. "My mum made me that." "Well, she's no longer there, is she?" said Aunt Colotta through the small window, which she'd opened to get a better view of Nicholas being sick. "Thank the Lord. Used to give me a headache listening to her bad singing all day. I just thought it was about time you should grow up and leave that silly toy behind. Nicholas had finished. He went back inside and thought of his mother. He thought of her holding on to the chain that held the bucket as she tried to escape the bear. How dare Aunt Carlotta say nasty things about her? There was only one option now, to run away. He could not stay here with Aunt Carlotta. He would prove his father wasn't a liar, and there was only one way to do it. Goodbye, Aunt Carlotta, he said, just a whisper under his breath, but he meant it. He was going. He was going to find his father. He was going to see the elves, and he was going to make everything all right. The next chapter is called A Very Short Chapter with a Long Title in Which Nothing Very Much Happens. Aunt Carlotta mumbled something and didn't look back at him as she climbed into her bed with two mattresses. Nicholas took some of the stale bread lying on the table and stuffed it in his pocket and went outside into the cold night. He was tired and his stomach still ached and his tongue tasted of rotten turnip. But he was also something else. Determined. Yes, he was going to start the walk to the far north. Mika was nibbling a dry leaf. The mouse had supposed he was the closest thing to a friend. I'm going to the far north. It will be a very long and dangerous journey, and there's a very high chance of death. I think you should stay here, Mika. It'll be warmer, but if you want to come with me, give me a signal. Mika looked anxiously at the door to the cottage. You don't have to stay right here, Nicholas told him. You have the whole forest. Mika glanced at the whole forest. But there's no cheese in the forest. Nicholas still could not speak mouse, but got the general gist. So you want to come with me? Mika perched on his hind legs. And though Nicholas couldn't be entirely sure, it seemed that the mouse nodded his little head, and so he picked him up and put him in his left-hand coat pocket. Then, with Mika peeking out at the road ahead, Nicholas turned and headed north through the trees towards the place he thought he might find his father and the elves, and tried his hardest to believe in both. The next chapter is called The Old Lady. He walked all night and all of the next day. He looked out for the tall brown bear and he saw paw prints in the ground, but not the creature itself. He walked to the edge of the pine forest and followed the path around the banks of the lake Blitzen. Ooh, that's a name you need to remember. The lake was so big and the water so pure and still that it was a perfect mirror of the sky. He travelled for days and nights and spotted a moose. And yes, on two occasions, he did see more bears, black bears. And once he had to climb a tree and wait an hour up in the branches for one of the bears to get bored and trudge away in the snow. He slept curled around the roots of trees with Mika in his pocket on the ground beside him. He lived on mushrooms and berries and fresh cool water, and he kept himself happy by singing Christmas tunes to himself, even though it was nowhere near Christmas. He imagined being rich and waking up on Christmas Day and having all the toys in the toy shop. Then he imagined something far better, giving his father a horse and cart. But all the time he was walking, it grew colder, and sometimes his feet hurt. Sometimes he went hungry, but he was determined to keep going. He eventually passed through the village that his father had told him about. It was just one street full of little wooden houses painted red. He walked along the street, and an old toothless lady, bent double over a walking stick, was coming along the road. In Nicholas's limited experience of every village always had to have one old toothless person walking around and saying scary things to strangers, so he was pleased that this was no exception. "Where go you, mysterious boy with mouse in your pocket?" she said. "North," is all he told her. "To look for cheese," added Mika, who still hadn't really got the point of the journey. The old woman was quite weird, but not weird enough to understand mouse language, so she just looked at Nicholas and shook her head. "Not north," said her face, as pale as sheet. A pale sheet, obviously. "Go east," she said, "or south, or west." "Only a fool would go north. No one lives in Lapland. There's nothing there." "Well, I must be a fool," said Nicholas. "There's nothing wrong with being a fool," said a fool with little bells on his shoes who was passing by. "The thing is, I'm looking for my father. He's a woodcutter. He's called Joel. He wears a red hat and he has very tired eyes. He only has 9½ fingers. He was with 6 other men. They were on their way to the far north." The old woman considered him, her face creased like a map. And speaking of maps, she pulled out something crumpled in her pocket and handed it to him. A map. "There were some men, yes, now I think of it. 7 of them. They came through the start of the summer. They had maps." Nicholas felt a surge of excitement. They dropped this one? Have they been back?" The old lady shook her head. "I tell you, those that go north never return." "Well, thank you very much," said Nicholas. He tried to smile to hide his worry. He had to give her something, so he decided upon berries, and he didn't have much else. Please have these berries." The old lady smiled in return, and Nicholas saw her gums were brown and rotten. "You're a good boy. Take my shawl. You'll need all the warmth you can get." And Nicholas, who could feel that even Mika, though relatively warm inside his coat pocket, was beginning to shiver, took a gift and thanked her again and went on his way. Oh my, the map. That's a lot. The route to the far north, that's what the map is. It's got Lapland and then it's got Finland at the bottom. Gosh. On and on he walked, following the map, over plains and ice-covered lakes and snow-covered fields and forests full of spruce trees. One afternoon, Nicholas sat down underneath one of the snowy spruce trees and checked his feet. They were covered in blisters. The only bits of skin that weren't covered in blisters and were bright red. And his shoes, which had been tatty to start off with, had practically fallen to pieces. "It's no use," he told Mika. "I don't think I can go on. I'm too tired and it's getting too cold. I'll have to go home." But even when he said that word, home, he realised that he didn't have one. There was a cottage in the pine forest, but that wasn't home anymore. Not with Aunt Carlotta living there. Not when he wasn't even able to sleep in his own bed. "Listen, Mika," he said, feeding the mouse a mushroom as he sat down by a tree. "It might be best for you if you stayed in the forest. Look at the map. I don't know if we'll make it." Nicholas and Mika peered at the map, but the path that they had followed was illustrated by a dotted line. They looked like footsteps in the snow. The map had no straight lines on it. It was just one long, curving path, weaving through forests and around lakes towards a large mountain. He knew the mountain was large because it was called, on the map, Very Large Mountain. He lifted the mouse out of his pocket and placed him on the ground. "Go on, Mika, leave me. Look, there are leaves and berries and you'll be able to live here. Go on." The mouse looked up at him. "Leaves and berries? Don't insult me with talk of leaves and berries. Seriously, Mika, it's best for you." But Mika just crawled back onto Nicholas's foot, and Nicholas put the mouse back in his pocket. Nicholas rested his head on the mossy ground and pulled the old lady's shawl over him. And right there in the daylight, he fell fast asleep. As he slept, snow fell, and he dreamed a dream about being a child and going to the hills near Lake Blitzen, and of being on the sleigh and his father pushing him and his mother laughing. He was so happy inside that dream. There was a scratchy feeling, and he sprung awake. Mika was pawing at his chest and squeaking with fear. "What is it, Mika?" "I don't have a clue," squeaked Mika, "but it's really big and it has horns on its head." Then Nicholas saw it, the creature. It was so close that for a moment he didn't know what it was. It certainly seemed large from where Nicholas was sitting, but it wasn't a bear. It was covered in dark grey fur and had a broad, strong-looking head, like a moose. But it's definitely not one. The creature's chest was heavy with deep breaths, and it wasn't grey, but as white as snow. And the animal was making strange noises, as if it was a pig crossed with a wolf. He saw the large, velvet-haired antlers that bent and twisted like trees leaning in the wind. Then he realised, it's a reindeer. A very big and very angry reindeer, and it was staring at Nicholas. The reindeer stood back, looking large and ferocious. Its dark grey fur was the colour of the storm clouds above. It moved its giant head from left to right. Oh my. And then up, and let out a grunting roar as a roll of thunder crashed in the sky. Mika squeaked meekly in fear, and Nicholas clambered to his feet. Good reindeer, good boy. Are you a boy? Nicholas looked. You are a boy. It's all right, I'm not going to hurt you. Okay, I'm a friend. The words had no effects at all. In fact, they made the reindeer rear up on its hind legs, and the animal towered over Nicholas. Its front hooves came within an inch of his face, pawing at the air in anger. Nicholas backed into a tree. His heart was pounding. What should we do? Asked Mika. But Mika clearly had no plans that he felt inclined to share. Should we run? Nicholas knew there was no way he'd be able to outrun the reindeer. His breath whitened the air and he was rigid with shock. The reindeer was big, in a big heavy mass of muscle and fur and clouded nostril breath. Through the stormy air he came wild, grunting, huffing and puffing, with his head low now and his large antlers pointing directly into Nicholas's face. This must have been the largest and most furious reindeer in the whole of Finland. Lightning flashed across the sky and Nicholas glanced up. Hold on tight, Mika, Nicholas said, and he jumped up and grabbed the branch just above him with two hands, and swinging himself up out of the reindeer's path, the thunder rumbled. The reindeer collided straight into the spruce tree as Nicholas hooked his leg around the branch and held on even tighter. Nicholas was hoping that the reindeer would eventually get bored and leave him in peace. But the reindeer stayed there, pawing the ground and circling the tree. Nicholas noticed something. The reindeer was hobbling. There was a thin, broken line of wood sticking out of one of its rear legs. It had been shot with an arrow. Oh, poor creature, thought Nicholas. Just then, Nicholas felt the branch crack beneath him and he plummeted towards the ground, landing hard on his back. Oh! A shadow moved over him. It was the reindeer. Listen, Nicholas gasped. I can get it out. He mimed the action of pulling an arrow out of the leg of the reindeer, and as a rule, reindeers aren't very good at understanding mime. So the reindeer swung his head around, his antlers crashing into Nicholas's ribs. This also caused Mika to fly out of his pocket, somersaulting through the air, only to collide with the tree. Nicholas clambered to his feet, fighting off the pain. You're hurt. I can help you. The reindeer paused and it made a grunting, snuffling sound. Nicholas took a deep breath and summoned up all the courage he could possess and edged forward gingerly, and he touched the reindeer's leg just above the arrow. He stopped. The arrow feathers were grey, This was exactly the arrow that had been fired at the bear. This was an arrow belonging to Anders, the hunter. They've been here, Nicholas thought aloud. He pulled the arrow out fast and scooped up some of the snow in his hand, remembering how his dad had once helped the moose. He patted snow around the wound where the arrow had pierced the skin. I know that hurt, but you'll feel better soon. The arrow had been stuck deep in the flesh, but Nicholas saw that the blood had hardened and realised that the arrow had probably been stuck there for days, if not weeks. The poor creature was moving again now, yanking his leg from left to right in pain. Then it made a deep, anguished moan. It's all right, Nicholas said as the moaning faded away. The reindeer shivered from the shock a little and turned and bit Nicholas's thigh. Hey, I'm trying to help you. And then the reindeer bowed his head and stood still for a moment and went to the toilet. Here, said Nicholas, summing up the last bit of courage, and scooped up some more snow and patted it on the wound. After a couple of minutes, the reindeer stopped shaking and seemed calmer. The clouds of air coming out of its nostrils grew smaller, and it started grazing in the snow, looking for tufts of grass. Sensing that the reindeer would finally leave him alone, Nicholas stood up on his aching, blistered, freezing feet and brushed himself down. Mika ran over and Nicholas put him in his coat pocket, and they both looked up and saw the largest, brightest light in the night sky, the North Star. Nicholas checked around him and saw a large lake to the east and ice plains to the west. He looked down at the map. They needed to walk directly north in the straightest line possible. He started walking in the direction, crunching through the thickening snow. But after a little while, he heard footsteps. The reindeer. Only this time it wasn't trying to charge him. It just tilted his head like a dog might. I don't like the scary moose with the trees growing out of its head, grumbled Mika. Nicholas carried on walking, and every time he stopped to look back, the reindeer stopped too. Shoo, said Nicholas. You don't want to come with us, trust me. I've still got a long way to go, and I'm not much company. But the reindeer kept following him, and eventually, after several miles, Nicholas grew tired again. His legs felt heavy. He could see the soles of his feet through his shoes, and his head ached from cold and exhaustion. The reindeer, though, despite his injured leg, didn't seem tired at all. Indeed, when Nicholas was forced to stop and rest his legs and take the pressure off his blisters, the reindeer walked in front of him, and noticing Nicholas's damaged shoes and injured feet, lowered his head and knelt on his front two knees. "You want me to climb on your back?" Nicholas asked. The reindeer made a snuffling, grunting, snorty sound. Is that yes in reindeer, Mika? What do you think?
I think no, said Mika.
Nicholas's legs were so tired and his feet were so painful that he decided to risk it. You do realise that there are two of us, my mouse and me, is that okay? It appeared to be so Nicholas climbed up on the reindeer's back and, well, did the only thing that he could do. He hoped for the best.